Okay. All righty. All right. So Case for Christ lessons 9, Jesus on the Witness Stand part 2, actually. We talked about the identity evidence of Jesus last class. Was Jesus really convinced that he was the Son of God? And so tonight we're going to look at the psychological evidence, and we're going to look also on the profile evidence. Did Jesus fulfill the attributes of God? So the first thing we're going to look at is, was Jesus crazy or delusional or whatever you might want to say when he claimed it to be the Son of God? So we'll look at that. And the fingerprint evidence, though, we're not going to look at next class. That'll be James teaching the resurrection, crucifixion, resurrection. And then we may circle back and look at fingerprint evidence in the one of the final two classes. Okay. So kind of reviewing last class, you know, we discussed this idea: was Jesus really convinced that he was the Son of God, right? Or was it just people, you know, his followers after the fact were making these claims? Well, we looked at the evidence in the Gospels about, you know, this idea of him being the Son of God. The book talked a lot about the Son of Man, right? He spoke of himself as the Son of Man, referencing the prophecy in Daniel 7, right? Some of the things that he talked about, right? He said the Son of Man was the Lord even of the Sabbath. The Son of Man talked about him being in heaven. What do men say that I am, the Son of Man, that I, the Son of Man, am? This is during the during Peter's confession, the great confession that he makes. Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And he further talks about that. Other claims that Jesus made that Jesus really was convinced that he was the Son of God. He claimed that he was the Son of the living God. That Jesus, we talked about that instance where he was across the Sea of Galilee, and the demons, the legion, the man with the legion demons came and he worshipped him and he accepted the worship, right? Jesus claimed God as his Father. And in that great discourse where he identifies himself as the I am, the eternal Jehovah, right? And so throughout the Gospels, he's identifying himself as the Messiah, the Son of God, and he's equating himself to the Father. And he even gets in trouble for that, right? That's why he gets put on the cross, right? I mean, it's this idea that he's made himself equal with the Father. He's blasphemed, if you will, something that the Jews have convicted him of. So, okay, so that's kind of where we're at, right? Lesson 9. So the opening question of lesson 9 is kind of interesting. I thought I'd just put this out here. It's kind of a strange question, and maybe you don't have an answer for it, but I'm going to ask you the question. Have you ever believed something for which you knew other people? You knew other people would think you were crazy, delusional, irrational. If so, what was it? I don't know if anybody has an answer to that. I feel like James has got an answer. I'm just kidding. No. Yeah, that's kind of a loaded question, right? I mean, and I was thinking about it too, and the only thing I can think of was, you know, like when I was younger, you know, thinking I was going to be some kind of hotshot superstar basketball player or something like that. So I had these like, and maybe it's not craziness or delusional, maybe it's irrational. So, you know, that, you know, I think about that in terms of like, you know, thinking I can actually accomplish that. And people think, man, that's just irrational, right? You don't have the ability, you don't have the athleticism or you don't have the height or the measurables or whatever it may be, you know. But did what other people thought make you crazy, make you delusional, make you an irrational person? And in my case, did what other people thought about me make me irrational, delusional, or crazy?
Yeah.
No.
No, just the thought.
Yeah. That I would make it to the NBA. That's right. Did you hope that their history, behavior, or your character would testify to your standing? So, for instance, you know, if I really was a hard working guy and I practiced a lot at basketball, but I just was like 5'5" or whatever, and what, you know, 120 pounds or whatever. And someone said, you know, that's irrational if you think you're going to make the NBA. You know, if someone looked at the history of my behavior and my character, knowing I was a hard worker, I was dedicated, I was driven, and the history of my behavior and the character may testify to my sanity, right? That this thought is something that's not necessarily irrational, crazy, or delusional. Maybe it may be unlikely, but it may not be delusional, crazy, or irrational.
Spud Webb.
Say that again.
Spud Webb.
That's right. Spud Webb, Muggsy Bogues, those guys, right? I think of like Julian Edelman, right? He's maybe a Hall of Famer. He's a small guy, whatever. But Nate Robinson, that's right. Thank you, Sojourn. you know, here's another thing I thought about when I was talking about this idea of Jesus and people looking at Jesus and looking at him as just a man, and even though he was just a man in the flesh, he was God, and for people to think of him as God was kind of like you know, on the surface, people think that's a delusional statement, that Jesus of Nazareth was God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the disciples and the feeding of the 5,000, where they kind of failed in their faith in terms of believing that God could feed all these people, right? And then right after that, they're in the boat walking on the water, and Peter fails in his faith because while they knew that he could feed people, 5,000 or plus people with food, it's almost like they thought that his power was limited to, you know, his power was limited to certain things, because, you know, maybe he had the ability to feed 5,000 people and make food out of nothing, but certainly he didn't have power over, like, nature, right? That's a totally separate thing, a greater thing that he couldn't have power over. And so, you know, this idea of, you know, what people think of you, you know, you know, that type of thing doesn't necessarily define your irrationality, your craziness, or your delusion, right? It's really should be based on, you know, your history of behavior, your character, if, in fact, you are irrational, crazy, or delusional. I think I may be talking in circles there, but skeptics accuse Jesus of delusion for claiming to be equal with God, but the proof of sanity should have been in his character and the evidence of such claims, right? And so the skeptic might say this about Jesus, right? We talked about last class, you know, if it is the truth that Jesus of Nazareth actually believed himself to be the only begotten son, last lesson, is this not surely the strongest evidence against him, right? Is this not a sure sign of mental illness in the extreme, right? And so that's really always been, you know, the proposition with Jesus, right? He's either who he claims to be, the Son of God, right? Or he's a lunatic, right? For claiming to be the Son of God, right? It's either one or the other, right? And so the skeptic might say this about Jesus, right? So the skeptic might say, well, you know, he may have believed that he's the Son of God, but the fact that he believes he's the Son of God is the strongest evidence against him in that he's mentally ill, or he's delusional, mm-hmm. or whatever it may be. So they may call him a megalomania, suffering from megalomania, delusions of grandeur, complete disassociation from reality, and you can see people making that, making those claims, right? And again, the question is a valid one, right? But we need to consider the following, right? Did Jesus exhibit any signs of mental illness associated with his identity claims, right? Looking into the scriptures, looking into the gospel accounts, does Jesus exhibit any signs of mental illness or delusion or whatever it may be, right? Irrationality. Based on all that we know of his behavior, can we consider him insane? So that's what we're going to look at here first. Matthew's coming in.
So?
Okay, he's coming.
All right.
Every time I do that, I get knocked off my thing here. Okay. All right. So, question is, based on your common sense notions of mental health, What would you consider to be sure signs of someone that suffers from mental illness? What would be something that would be characteristic of somebody that has that you would that has some type of a mental illness, right?
Well, I think it's hard to not go the route of maybe seeing things that no one else can see or hearing things that no one else can hear.
Sure.
It seems to be a sign of mental illness.
Yeah. I can't think of the word, but yeah, I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Unable to follow, basic logic. They seem to be disassociated with just kind of the normal way of looking at things. It just seems to be odd. They'll see a certain way, and everybody else is probably shaking their heads. That I don't know how you got there with this, you know.
Yeah.
This stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Basic logic, right? Yep. Anything else?
If you know the person, they would be like acting out of their character, acting out of their usual personality traits.
Very good. Great background, by the way.
Thanks.
Anything else?
I would say, and there's been some instances where people's own personal, whatever, the way they see the world can attract other people, like a following, like maybe a Charles Manson. But generally, people with mental illness don't amass such a large following of people that are willing to, like at some point, the people close to you would, or your followers listening to you speak, at some point you would make a statement that was, I don't know the word I'm looking for, that wasn't able to be tolerated. That was so outlandish or offensive that your followers would be like, okay, this guy's actually not within the realm of possibility here.
Sure, right. Look, while he still has followers or she has followers, the majority of people, you wouldn't have a multitude of followers per se, right? Because they would see through his, yeah.
If we keep going down that route that Ryan's saying, though, someone who claims to be God and claims to have deity, you might consider mental illness.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. And by the way, there was a time when people, when Jesus was sloping up in terms of, popularity, and there was a certain point in time when it went like this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. Yeah, very good. Very good. Emotional extremes. Some of the things on my list, or the lessons list. Illogical thinking. James, I think you touched on that. Speaking to beings that are not there, I believe Dustin, I think you mentioned that. Seeing things also, right? Going into fits, right? Have you ever seen anybody go into a fit? That may not be mental illness, but
I was gonna say I do that sometimes.
Withdrawal from human life. Okay. Believing you are someone you are not, right? You guys had some extra ones there that were really good. The one that, let's see. Hang on, so I'm writing this down. Hang on. The one that Ryan had mentioned. So did the gospel suggest Jesus had any of these symptoms? Or even the ones that aren't listed, the ones you guys talked about? Was Jesus emotionally extreme? Did he talk with illogical thinking? Did he teach us with illogical thinking? Those types of things, withdrawn from human life. Was he the loner, if you will?
I was thinking about any emotion that he showed was the proper emotion for whatever the activity, the situation.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Some people claim that he was, right, mentally ill. But a lot of times those are just ways to kind of get at him when they couldn't catch him in a lie or catch him, whatever it may be, right?
And even the kind of the opposite, when I guess normally you wouldn't respond in a certain way, he wouldn't. The whole thing about being silent as a the sheep before as a lamb. He didn't respond as normal people would respond under the same situation. So
right.
He did exhibit some self-control that was, you know, someone would say that's different than what normal people would do.
Right. Right. Yeah. So he spoke eloquently, forcibly, with clarity of thought. Right. So we see that contrary to this list. His emotions were healthy as could be and stable. He could function in society, have rational things to say about it, right? He spoke to God in prayer, and sometimes God answered back, and everyone could hear it, right? So he wasn't necessarily speaking to things that weren't there, as some may claim. But so the Gospels do suggest that, you know, that Jesus lived and thought and spoke and got along with people contrary to someone that would be described as having some kind of mental illness, right? So we just don't see that in the scriptures. So the book kind of goes into some of the – did someone say something? Okay. The book kind of goes into some explanation on this, and they got some really good stuff in here where it talks about, you know, what experts say about certain things, right? You know, they say that people suffering from delusions have grandiose beliefs that they're superlative individuals, right? And so the writer of the book was saying, you know, could that be what happened with Jesus, right? Psychologists don't look at what a person says. They go much deeper than that. They look at a person's emotions, right? Because most people that are suffering from delusions, you know, show depression, anger, and these kind of like high swings, you know, swings of emotions and things like that. That, right, plagued with anxiety, right? We just don't see that in Jesus in the Gospels, right? So, you know, looking at Jesus, he never demonstrated inappropriate emotions, right? You know, we see him crying at the death of his friend Lazarus, natural, healthy emotion, right? Even in his anger, right? It was a healthy kind of anger. It was anger at, you know, people taking care of the downtrodden, the widows and children and things like that. And so we see Jesus demonstrating emotions that are like healthy emotions, that are normal emotions, not emotions that swing, you know, from highs to lows, or maybe described as being what we call nowadays bipolar, if you will. I don't know if that's what they call it, but we don't see that in Jesus. Another thing from the book, arguments against a delusional Jesus, is other deluded people have misperceptions, right? Always thinking people are watching them, right? Or trying to get at them while they're not, right? Jesus knew people were coming after him, right? But he wasn't like always watching his back and like, you know, kind of a hermit person because, you know, he knew people were after him. He knew people were after him and he knew why. But he wasn't in that sense of misperceiving people were after him, right? He knew people were after him, and so he dealt with it in the way that he did.
Would paranoid be probably a better explanation, you know, people after you, wasn't paranoid?
Right.
Is that kind of the idea?
I think that's right. Yep.
Which goes along with mental illness.
Paranoia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. People have delusional, they're out of contact with reality, right? Jesus, you know, there's no sense of him being out of contact with reality, right? He was in the moment. He understood reality and logic and those types of things. People who are delusional misperceive the actions of other people, right? We know Jesus knew the hearts of men, right? He knew exactly what people were doing. He knew exactly why they were doing it, what they were doing. He could predict what they were doing, right? I mean, we know all that with an, you know, omniscient Jesus. So we, again, these misperceptions, we don't see that in Jesus either. People with psychological difficulties may have thinking disorders, right? And I think James touched on this. They can't carry on a logical conversation. They jump to faulty conclusions. Things are irrational. Things don't make sense. And again, you know, Jesus isn't like that. In fact, Jesus uses logical conclusions when he makes statements, right? When he refers back to the old scriptures and makes logical conclusions on who he is And furthermore, he requires and he demands that from us, right? He demands that we make logical conclusions in order for us to conclude who he is, to have faith in him. So again, we don't see that in Jesus as well. Another sign of mental disturbance is unsuitable behavior, right? Dressing oddly or being unable to relate socially, right? Being kind of a social misfit or a hermit, or you know, whatever that may be. Jesus' behavior was normal, right? In line with what was expected. He had relationships with people, deep relationships with people. He wasn't awkward, you know, socially awkward in the sense of, you know, a delusional person would be socially awkward. So yeah, he got along with sinners and, you know, people high and mighty. And so a lot of things. So yeah, he's quite normal, right?
I think John the Baptist one, they would have thought was crazy.
Yeah, that's a good point. He was a little bit of a different type of a, you know, personality, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. So some arguments, so in contrast to those who suffer mental illness, Jesus was loving but didn't let his compassion immobilize him. He didn't have a bloated ego, even though he was surrounded by adoring crowds. This is what you might expect from someone who's delusional, right? You have all these people, you know, following you. You know, your ego's going to go straight up, and you're going to probably do things you're not supposed to do, right? Maintain the balance despite often demanding lifestyle, right? Think about all the times that he had to get away from the crowd or go alone praying all night at night, and people still trying to follow him. You know, he seemed to maintain a balanced lifestyle, if you will, or a balanced mentality, if you will. He always knew what he was doing, where he was going, right? He had a mission. He knew what it was. He cared deeply about people, including women and children, who weren't seen as being important in those days. So just to kind of conclude, none of the evidence from the Gospels show the signs of a man that is mentally ill, delusional, or crazy, right? So that kind of wraps up that psychological evidence section, where doesn't show any signs of delusion, a delusional Jesus, as some skeptics might want to say. I feel like people that make that claim, you know, haven't really read the scriptures, right? Because it's pretty obvious, I would think. I mean, I think that if you read the scriptures, you see someone that's, you know, is logical, exhibits the types of characteristics that you would find in a normal person, right? As normal as Jesus can be described, but definitely not someone that's delusional or irrational, if you will. So, any thoughts or questions on that section of the lesson?
Yeah, I feel like the only way you'd be able to prove that he's delusional is if you could prove that he wasn't God,
right?
And that those claims that he made were in fact false. Because like you said, outside of that, there's no real evidence towards it. Certainly not based on the Gospels.
Sure, and you know, this is just one piece of the puzzle, right? I mean, when we're talking about, you know, this whole idea of the case for Christ, you know, it's marrying and putting pieces on top of each other, right? That fit the whole puzzle that, you know, this Jesus of Nazareth was the Son of God, and he is who he is, right? And we ought to be, you know, living our lives in concert with how he wants us to live. And so, you know, his identity, we see he's not crazy. He was convinced he was the Son of God. Did he fulfill the attributes of God? I think so. We're going to look at that in just a second, right? And so even the stuff before, where, you know, where the testimony of the Gospels, are they reliable? You know, all that stuff fits together, right, in this whole study. So, okay, so we're going to look at the profile evidence. Did Jesus fulfill the attributes of God? So a skeptic might further claim that Jesus appears to be mentally stable. He's still just a man, not God, right? He was not really omnipotent. He was not really omniscient. nor was he eternal, right? And so this is someone claiming this, and we see in the Gospels themselves, that and they're saying we see this in the Gospels themselves. And so these, what we're going to look at here are some so speaking, okay, so I'm going to ask you, you know, how do we address this? How does it sound, and how can we describe, and how can we explain this to say, okay, it's not really saying what it may on the surface be saying. So, okay, all right. Every time we do that, I lose it. Okay, so skeptics point to these verses to say that Jesus is not omnipotent or all powerful. How can we dispute these claims? So Mark 7:24. He says, Mark says, from there he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. So that was kind of a strange, kind of like pulling this out of like the whole context. But so they would look at this and say, well, he couldn't be hidden, right? That tells us that Jesus really wasn't omnipotent, right? He's not all powerful if he couldn't be hidden, right? I'm going to go ahead and answer this because this is kind of a little bit strange, but just this idea of the context, right? I mean, Jesus' power not in question, right? But just his ability not to hide him, right? You know, so it wasn't that he didn't have the power to be hidden. It's just in the context of being in that room or that home, he couldn't be hidden, and people can see him and things like that. And so, you know, while someone might take this out of context and just say, okay, well, you know, he entered the house, wanted no one to know, but he couldn't be hidden, says he didn't have the power, the almighty power of God to hide himself. Well, that's not really the context of the verse, you know.
And so John chapter 8, the I am statement immediately after that says they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself.
Right, right.
And went out of the temple.
Yeah, there you go.
I think the New King James says Jesus passed through them. Like,
right.
I don't know how, if that's the only one you're looking at, then, I mean, perhaps, but even that can prove it. But there are just so many other instances where he did want to hide himself, and he was successful in doing so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point. Thanks, Dustin. Matthew 13. Now he did not do many mighty works because of their unbelief, right? Again, taking this out of context, right, and saying, okay, Jesus is not omnipotent because he couldn't do the works because of their unbelief, right? How might you respond to that?
I would say in this case it implies that he could have if he wanted to,
mm-hmm.
if he chose not to,
yeah,
because like, well, you guys don't believe in me anyway, so what's the point?
Yeah.
I don't think that's implying that he didn't have the power to do them in the first place.
Very good.
The whole reason why he spoke in parables, right?
Yeah.
If people wanted to understand, they would understand. But in this case, the works wouldn't change them, so
sure. Why? Very good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Jesus is like, yeah, he's limiting his power himself, right? It wasn't like he didn't want to do them because there would be, you know, they didn't have the belief there even to, that would even, you know, the mighty works wouldn't have even worked anyway. So, yeah, very good, very good. You guys got the idea here. Skeptics point to the verses to say that Jesus is not all good. How could we dispute these claims, right? So, again, out of context, Mark 10:17 and 18. Now he was going on the road, one running knelt before him, asked him, good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? So Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. And so this is obviously the rich young ruler speaking. And Jesus says, no one is good but the one, that is God, implying, the skeptics might imply, well, Jesus is saying, you know, only God is good and Jesus. Again, and taking out of context. How about your response?
Yeah, he's basically saying, do you know what you're saying? If you're calling me good,
yeah.
You know, I'm God, you know, that's what he's saying. No one's good but God. Do you understand what you're saying? You're calling me good. That's only reserved for God. And
yeah,
you would be right. But I know he wasn't even there thinking about that. He's just trying to get him to understand what you're saying is reserved for God.
That's right. That's right. And this point from the material kind of says that, right? Rather, he's asking the person if he really knows what he's saying when he calls Jesus the teacher, right? Yeah. Yeah. So he's, yeah, excellent. Okay. Skeptics point to these verses and say Jesus is not omniscient or all-knowing. How can we dispute these? Mark 13, but the day and the hour no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father, right? So this is the chapter where, you know, Jesus is predicting the destruction of the temple, you know, speaking about the end of the age, the abomination of desolation in the temple, coming of the Son of Man, and he ends up the chapter talking about no one knows the hour except not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. If he's omniscient, you know, like how would we respond to this? This may be a little bit more hard to tackle. All right. No answers. Okay, this is the answer from the material. So what the material says is, again, we see Jesus humbling himself, right, in his humanity. Part of the mystery is that God emptying himself out to become human, emptying himself, self-limiting his powers for sake of the mission. If he uses all his powers, runs the risk of limiting our human freedom, then I'm not sure that necessarily applies. He cares more about that than his own power, right? If he let himself tell when the end of the world would be, it would take a lot of motivation out of the people to be vigilant. I'm not sure I like that answer so much. And I will say that this one is kind of a little bit difficult to explain, right? I mean, if we're talking about Jesus not being omniscient, right? I'm not sure this takes away from Jesus' omniscience overall. I think it does speak to, you know, the Godhead, and it speaks to the roles of each individual in the Godhead, right? And it just is so that the Father is going to be the one that knows the end of the age, right? I don't think it necessarily takes his omniscience away, right?
No.
I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, you know, Jesus always let everyone know that he submitted himself to the Father.
Mm-hmm.
And again, submission doesn't mean you're not equal to. You have voluntarily submitted your will to someone else. And so I think Jesus over and over just kind of reiterated that and the things that he said. The Father and I have been working. He'll say something about the Father, then he would include himself in there. But, you know, it was always putting the Father first in a lot of things.
Right.
In a lot of things. So I think it's, again, submission. I came to do the Father's will. He wants that to be on everybody's mind, not his own will. And so I think that's just another way, again, of shining the spotlight where it needs to be.
Right. And maybe perhaps it's a way of Jesus saying, you know, I'm not the one that can reveal it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus in his omniscience may know. I mean, may know, but he's saying he doesn't know because he doesn't have that's not his role to reveal when the day and the hour will come, right?
You know, that question was asked again, you know, when he was about to ascend. Are you about to deliver, is the kingdom now? And he's like, again, you guys are asking these questions about things. So, you know, I think it's just the way God, I mean, sorry, the way Jesus was communicating with it. And particularly here, the hour and the time was not important. It was about you being prepared. So, you know, that's you know, about this event that's going to happen. So it's not about giving you a certain time for anything. It's about you being prepared. And so, you know.
Yeah. No, I like that. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Anybody else got any? Anything else? All right. Nonetheless, perhaps this is most difficult of passages. Okay, not omniscient. If you love me, you would rejoice because I said I'm going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. Doesn't apply. This doesn't apply. He makes him. You know, I think James, you talked a little bit about that, right? Already. Doesn't make him less God, right? To say that the Father is greater than I, right? He's just submitting himself to the Father in the Godhead, right? And so. I think that kind of answers that question there. All right, this is a good one. Skeptics point to the verse to say that Jesus is not eternal but created. How can we dispute his claims? Colossians 1 says he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation.
Then he goes on to say nothing that was created without him. So.
That's right.
Are we talking about created or preeminent? So, you know.
Right. Right. That's right. Yes, it says even here, you read the complete context, right? You know, he's the image of the invisible God, first of all, over creation. For him, all things are created that are in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, right? So, yeah. So, you know, the firstborn really is the notion of being preeminent, right? Preeminence instead of.
And somebody with a Jewish background.
Yeah.
You understand how that's important right. The firstborn, and I know other cultures are that's important to them, but particularly from a Jewish perspective about the double blessings and all the prominence that means
right.
When you're the firstborn. So that's more what it's talking about here than anything else.
Right. Great. So on the contrary, there are many passages that clearly point to Jesus as divine in origin, sharing all the powers of God. He is omniscient, all-knowing, John 6, right? His disciples said to him, see, now you are speaking plainly, da-da-da. By this we believe that you came forth from God, right? Now we are sure that you know all things, have no need that anyone should question you. His disciples are testifying to his omniscience. Omnipresent, lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age, Matthew 28. Matthew 18, for where there are two or three gathered in my name, I'm there in the midst of them, right? So these aren't, yeah. So these kind of testify to his omniscience. And again, when we reference these gospels, we're referencing them with the knowledge of the lessons from 1 through 6 and 7, where we have said, okay, the testimony of the gospels are trustworthy. So we can go to these gospels and quote these things. And believe that they're trustworthy and use these as evidence for the things that we're saying about Jesus, because we've already said that these gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are trustworthy because of the evidence, right? So, you know, it's not like we're just circular reasoning here, but we've already made the decision in our minds that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are trustworthy documents, right? Okay. Is omnipotent, all powerful, all authority has been given on me. This idea of arise, take up your bed, go to your house. This idea of him having the power over this paralytic, this man's condition, and having the authority to forgive sins, and proving that through the miracle. He's eternal, right? John 1, that famous intro. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ, same yesterday, today, and forever. Okay. So I'm trying to get done here because we're close, and just questions in closing, right? Read Philippians 2:5-8, which speak of Jesus emptying and humbling himself to become human, right? What might be some motivations for God to do this, right? And so let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant, coming in the likeness of men, and being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself and becoming obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. So what might be some motivations for God to do this? In becoming, humbling himself to become human.
You can't die if he's not.
What's that?
He can't die if he's not human.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
To show obedience. Right. Obedient to the point of death. I think that's
mm-hmm. right, and it's even to the point of the death of the cross, right? And so it wasn't like he died of a sickness or whatever. I mean, he was tortured and the cruel death that he went through. And you know, I guess also living like a man. Living like a human so that he can empathize with what we go through. You know,
I think not just any person, but like a bond servant too. Yeah.
Right.
One of a pretty lowly stature.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And really to kind of show us like what we, you know, the type of mindset that we should have, right? The servant attitude.
Yeah. A perfect lamb can even come from that form, you know? I guess further emphasizing that God looks at the hearts of man as opposed to anything else. This perfect sacrifice came from the form of a bondservant.
Sure. Yeah. You know, again, the wisdom of God versus the wisdom of the world. Right. And so that's kind of like exhibit A on the differences there. What happens as a result of Jesus' mission, right? God highly exalted him and gave him the name which is above every name, right? And so he was highly exalted. He became Lord of all, right? Every knee should bow. Every tongue shall confess that Jesus is the Lord to the glory of the God and Father. So, hang on. Where am I going? Oh, sorry.
You're going backwards.
I was hitting the wrong one. Okay, last question. What other teachings about God might make? What's that? Oh, sorry. There we go. I need to go to remedial PowerPoint. Hang on. There we go. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. What other teachings about God might make it hard to believe that Jesus Christ is God incarnate?
I think the hardest thing for me to understand is sort of along the lines of what we've talked about already, but it's like the triune God. Mm-hmm. Like how that all can work and how we can explain that in a logical way that does each of them justice as well as is biblical and we can point to scripture.
Yeah.
I was thinking, just going along with that, if Jesus wouldn't have come, I don't think we even would have been. I mean, there's some kind of images in the Old Testament that there's somebody else working with God, but is that another angel or is that an angel? But we would not even remotely think about this. There's three people. Persons that share the same qualities as God. And I mean, that's one of the things that he just kind of illuminated that we would not have gotten that just from the scriptures. It was hard to grasp that concept. And, you know, church fathers, everyone still struggled with that idea, especially when you thought about God being one, meaning singular, not meaning, but singular in purpose and in unity and all these other things, not thinking there's more than one. That is just a hard concept to understand because we just don't, it's just so different than the things that we understand. It's just hard to grasp unless someone showed it to us.
Right. Right. Anything else, guys?
Yeah, I think also just the description of Jesus being the Son of God makes it hard to think of him as God incarnate, like actually God at the same time, too. Right. So even the imagery that the Bible uses, and I think there's clear reasons as to why he's considered this or why he's called the Son of God and given other names like that. But when you do try to pair those things together, it definitely makes it a little bit more difficult to see him as the Son of God as well as God. So is he a son or is he the father? Is he both? Like,
sure.
How can he be both?
Yeah,
that's right.
Like Corey was saying, that's something I struggle with. Yeah.
I mean, we can use
our relationships with people to kind of get an idea of what that looks like, and but it's never does it full justice, right? Of what it really is for the thought, you know, the Godhead and how that operates and stuff like that. Go ahead, James.
No, I had it and I forgot, but I know it was something along those, Jesus posed that question again about about David when he says, you know, my Lord said to my Lord, and he says, you know, whose son is he? Because it sounds like, you know, he said, you know, this Messiah, whose son is he? Because David's calling him Lord, and he says, my Lord. It's like, so, you know, that was his point to point out that the Lord was, the son was divine also. Right. I mean, it's the things that's been in there, but I think God's like, I am so complex out of this world that even the things that he's given us to try to grasp, I think Jesus gave us some picture of that. I think if he was not here in person, it would have been just, if we just had the text, it would be so hard. I mean, not saying it made it a little bit easier, but I think it would just really be hard to try to understand what the scriptures are trying to describe to us, what's going on in places that we can't see.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, just a couple of things I had, and it's not ground shattering or anything, but this idea of Jesus being omnipotent yet being crucified, you know, it's that whole element of him dying on the cross, and, you know, we know a lot about that, but just that idea, I think, to some people is a stumbling block, right? For those who don't believe, I should say, and God requiring the sacrifice, you know, he requires sacrifice, yet he provides himself as a sacrifice, right? I mean, not that really makes it hard for me to believe that Jesus Christ is God. And I just go back to the wisdom of God versus the wisdom of the world, right? We would have never wrote that story. It doesn't make sense in our world for someone to demand the ransom and then pay the ransom, you know? So that kind of stuff sticks out to me when I think about that.
Yeah, you would think is when he made it easier. You think, I know with some people when you're trying to talk to people, like, I wish it was easier, something easier, to, you know. And like I said, you mentioned in Corinthians where he says, "This is it. It's the cross." I know people gonna think it's foolish. People gonna say it's not wise. But God said, this is the mechanism, this is the tool, this is the thing that people are going to have to believe in.
Right.
And you're like, could you pick something else? That's not an easy thing to grasp to. But when you start taking all of this information as a whole, it should lead you then to this place. Just starting off fresh and new, that's very difficult to swallow. But I think God is like, here's all this information. I want you to take all this into consideration, and it will help you lead you to this point. But just coming out fresh, that's just not going to make sense to you.
Yeah, the death of a savior is insulting, and it's like shameful to those who are, you know, that are wise in this world, you know, and it doesn't make sense, you know. But. All right. If no one has anything else, I think we'll wrap it up here.
Well, next week we're going to talk about the resurrection and the crucifixion. So everybody just be prepared for that. I'm going to tell you, I was working on it today, and, man, I started weeping working on this. So it's it's hard stuff. I mean, I ran into some new stuff that I didn't know. And it is the compelling, it is the thing that God just says, this, I mean, it is remarkable. It really is. It's going to be a hard class.
Yeah, it really does, you know, it's kind of like the centerpiece of the gospel drawing the people that God wants, right? I mean, if you believe this, if you're going to put your trust in this, and you're gonna it requires the type of heart that God is really the type of person he really wants, right? He doesn't want anybody that's wise and haughty and proud. He wants someone that's humble and meek and lowly that would accept this as the answer to sin, right?
So I'm gonna try not to be lectury, but we'll
see. Bring your tissue. Plenty of tissue, James.
Bring my hey, hopefully my camera won't be working.
Yeah,
you
that's right.
You won't be able to see anything.
Well, you won't be able to mute the sniffles though. So,
anyway,
all right.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, appreciate you guys.
Yep.
Good to see you guys.
Yep.
Those of you who had your cameras on.
Yeah. Stop the recording.
All right, I will stop.
See you guys.
Yep. All right, guys.
Yep.